This is Off Planet Radio.
Segment of Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins, and the conversation you're about to hear is a telephone conversation that I had with Duncan O'Finnion, which was recorded on March 12th, 2014. And we thought we'd post this out because he makes some very interesting parallels between the second Thor movie, which has just gone out into release, with the events that have been talked about on this show specifically for about 4 years now, related to the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, and what happens when we begin to open up rifts into other dimensions. The Thor movie actually makes a fairly graphic and somewhat accurate picture of the dynamics behind that, and we thought we'd put this out. The conversation also goes over into some other subjects as well related to current events and the general state of the consciousness and readiness of the human race. And with that, we begin our conversation with Duncan O'Finnion. So we're talking about Thor, the Dark World.
And they put in the movie what we have been talking about for several years now, that a lot of the stuff has been caused by the Dark Elven race. I wish they'd gone into more detail about it, but it was enough. But what they talked about in the movie being the Grand Convergence, where the Nine Realms are lined up and the lines become blurred, that's what so many of these people out there today are calling lining up to the galactic center. It's the same thing. And that's where CERN comes in, when they power that puppy up and to lock it in and to start pulling them together. In the movie, the dark Elven had a power source from the ether, which came from creation itself. When everything was created, both good and evil, dark and light. It's the power of the darkness, the bad side.
Right, right.
And that's what they were using. But that's basically what CERN's going to be using, too. Except it's a whole hell of a lot bigger than the little box that they had in the movie.
Is that what they were calling the Tesseract?
No, the Tesseract itself is like a zero-point energy power source.
Okay.
That can be used to move long distances really quickly, and it magnifies the power of the mind.
I don't think I ever saw the Dark Elven race in a Marvel movie before. That kind of surprised me.
That's the first time, to my knowledge, they've ever been talked about on any movie. I don't know about the comic books or anything, because I never read comic books much. And I don't know.
Well, I don't remember it in the classic ones, and I did read Marvel Comics right probably through the 70s. But then there's so many arcs and comic books now, nobody can really keep up with it. So who knows? Because both Marvel and DC have gone all over the map with this stuff and really pulled in pretty much everything into the comics.
They have. And did you also notice with the Dark Elven in the facial features what they resemble?
Nothing's coming to mind at the moment, no.
Think of Dracula.
Oh, yeah. See, that's where I have to go back sometimes and see a movie a couple times, because there's so much visual stuff going on in these movies that you get distracted.
Yeah, exactly. But they told a lot of good stuff. And there was a lot of fluff in there, too. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in there that's just straight up BS in the movie. It was a pretty good movie. I didn't like the ending, but...
You mean which ending? There was three of them.
I only saw one.
Oh, on the version we watched last weekend, there were three different endings. They actually spliced in an ending in the credits and at the end of the credits. So you saw a different version of it than I did.
I saw the ending where Thor thought he was talking to the Allfather, and it was actually Loki.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah.
That's, that's the only one that I saw.
Yeah, no, there's two other endings that were woven into the credits on the version that I saw, which was the Blu-ray version. So I don't know. That's the other thing. They put these movies out and they splice all kinds of stuff into different versions of them now, too.
Yeah, they do.
But yeah, I don't think that's been part of the whole Marvel Universe thing with the Dark Elves. That's completely new as nearly as I can tell.
Well, they are an actual race, and they are some bad mother. They're actually talked about this before. There was the Elven race, and then they had a civil war, and it was over technology, and they created these what we call viruses, try to basically do what the projects have been doing here since World War II.
Right.
And to make them better, make them stronger, faster. The whole super soldier BS, and they fought a civil war about it, and they were driven down to one of the lower realms, which is then became known as the Dark Elven realm. Not Jotunheim. I can't even pronounce what it is. It's a shame. It hurts when you know what these things are, but you can't pronounce them.
Well, I know it comes from Germanic lore somewhere.
Yeah, ancient Germanic.
Yeah.
And then they also have some of the Swedish mixed in, which is also an offshoot of the ancient Germanic language as well. But they're one of the nine races, one of the nine realms. And they're, I've been saying it for several years, that they're the main culprit in just about everything that's going on. Because they want what they can't have. And Earth is called Midgard for a very specific reason, because it's right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So when there is the alignment or the configuration, Earth is slap in the middle. It's militarily, strategically prime. And it's the only one of the nine where you can reach the other eight.
So it's a jumping off point into other... Yes,
exactly.
We would call them realms or worlds.
Realms. For us, they're realms. For scientists, there's probably dimensions.
Right, yeah.
Different planets, different star systems and whatnot. But the Dark Elven realm is just that. It's dark. It's very dark. And very dry, very, very foreboding. Not a place you want to spend any time at. You know, you don't want to have a travel agent booking in that place. It still goes back to what we've been saying from day one. When everything gets lined up, they fire CERN, and they're going to try to merge at least two of the realms and higher if they can. And by merging the two realms, not only do they take control, but they gain Midgard, they gain Earth, which is kind of like the railway station for every place else. So we've said it before, it's a war that spans a very big theater, much more so than just what people see.
So, okay, I was doing a little bit of background searching on Dark Elves. This game, Age of Wonders, and I remember hearing about this. That's where you get the Dark Elves references. It's Age of Wonders 2, and it looks like they got a third one coming out. These role-playing games, and I've thought this ever since Dungeons & Dragons, that these role-playing games were in themselves kind of a tapping of energy for opening portals.
I agree with that. I agree. So you're one up on me on that. Once they got past Pac-Man, I stopped playing games.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons was actually not an electronic game. It was a board game. Basically, it was a card game.
See, I played chess because I was forced to play chess. And
these role-playing games weren't around when we were young.
No, they weren't.
But that these, you know, the uptick in role-playing games actually started in the 80s. It kind of preceded just slightly the computer age, and then once they got the ability to do this stuff in software, it's just off the map now. Some of these games, these people live in these worlds. I mean, you go into the websites and you look at them, and there's guys that are on there for 12 hours at a time.
Damn, I can't comprehend doing that.
Well, I've thought for a long time, as somebody who's really been around since the beginning of all this personal computer technology, that there was a certain level of hypnosis that went into it. I mean, the internet for some people is just an addiction. It's like, you know, it's like crack.
I've never been a game player.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm not really either.
Chess, of course, because, you know, I was forced to play chess.
So connect that to this love and light. See, the biggest dance in the world right now is not embracing dangerous deceptions. And I go through this constantly because I interview people and then I go back and I listen to what they say. I mean, sometimes I get a gut level feeling, and then other times I'm kind of like, it's more subtle. But the whole idea of lining up with, tie that into this whole lining up with, you know, Galactic Center or whatever the hell it is they're talking about.
The way I see the whole love and light shebang that's going on right now is exactly what you said. It is a deception. It's a grand deception. It's to give people this false sense that if all you have to do is just think good thoughts and everything's going to be fine. You know, or what's the popular version now, don't worry, it's all a matrix. None of this is real. Yeah, tell that to the guy who's ready to rip you to shreds. It's very real to him. But what's commonly known, the grand alignment, or, you know, as we've been calling it, the grand convergence. Yeah, granted, the movie says every 5,000 years. As far as what we know, it's much longer than that. It's kind of like the whole 26,500-year cycle that started with Stitching back, what, in the 70s when he put it all together. It's more along those lines. And it's happened. From what we understand, it won't happen again. This is even
the last round.
This is it.
Yeah, and, you know, regardless of, this has been real consistent with what I've thought and also what other people have said. And part of it is that everybody that I interview has a slightly different take on this. And I've kind of wavered at the point where I go, okay, I know this is the final round on this. I think I've known this since I was a kid. I've always just felt that way. But I'm not willing to bet the farm on lining up with galactic space people, and I'm not also ultra apocalyptic in that I believe that the whole, you know, I just did this interview with this guy named Joseph Chapalone, and I mean, he's fairly convinced that everything just gets vaporized, and I'm not that far to the arc on the other side of that.
No, I don't agree with that. That everything gets
vaporized. I took some heat for interviewing him, but I said, look, you know, he presented enough interesting stuff to me. I'm willing to talk to him. It doesn't mean that I don't even agree with myself some days. I have more arguments with myself over shit than I do with anybody else. Because I'm just willing to admit there's stuff I don't know. There's a lot I don't know.
That's the key to understanding, is admitting that you don't know it.
No, I'm constantly probing. I'm like retesting things and going back and looking. And I mean, I'm kind of like you, that I go back and I read ancient books and I read ancient lore and I research stuff from different perspectives, and I've done this since I was a kid. And I still admit there's a limit, there's a cap on how far I will go in terms of making some solid projection about what the future of this, quote, dimension, universe, whatever is. But it's decisively now moving towards something.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, different cultures, they all have the same basic, but yet all these different cultures see it from their point of view, from their cultural point of view.
Yeah, it's even in the I Ching, which is like 5,000 years old, which is, you know, it's ancient in terms of this present age. Which is the other thing about it. You know, you think about it. We've had a lot of ages before this. I mean, I think we've been, like you said, through this cycle a number of times. And I think we're talking about hundreds of thousands of years.
Absolutely. You know, there is no guarantee. You know, we have our version, which goes on some of the knowledge that, you know, that we have and what we've been told and whatnot. The Hopi have theirs, Cherokee have theirs, the North, and so on and so forth. But everybody does agree on one point. We are moving very quickly into something huge.
Yeah.
That is the one point that all the cultures agree on. And exactly what it is, I don't think any of us know.
Well, I'm not sure that this... Okay, so here's where I kind of step pretty close to my gray zone. I think some of this is not yet written. I think that there is a certain amount of decision on a collective consciousness level and also individually.
Thank you.
How malleable is reality in terms of individual consciousness? Well, perceptually, it's huge. And yet, yep, we have to somehow agree on what we call reality. So now there's a collective consciousness.
Right.
But the way humanity is tilting right now, and I mean, to me, it's gotten worse. I just see people, and I've said this for a while, but it's gotten worse. I see people hardening. It seems like they're either, they've chosen light or they've chosen darkness. And I'm not sure for some people there's any way back. I think they crossed the threshold.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And there's something that you and I have talked about many times. Time is very fluid.
Very fluid.
Things change. Things change. What stand as an absolute fact as we're talking right now, next week, because of decisions that can be made, it may not be an absolute fact.
I know one of the things that I've been seeing is things that were supposed to happen that didn't, or things that were planned,
yes,
that didn't happen. And this was like, do you remember this must have been September or October, whenever Obama was really saber-rattling to go in
Syria.
To Syria. And I had to show that Wednesday night. This was in a 24-hour window. And on a complete whim, I called Alfred Lambermont Weber and said, do you want to come on and do a show tonight? And that was the show that we did on Obama. And 48 hours later, it was like over. There was no way they were going into Syria. The Capitol switchboard was jammed. The internet was full of people who were just up in arms over this. It was like collectively something happened that flipped the switch. And if this would have been 93 or 2002 and one of the Bushes had been in office, the tanks would have been rolling.
We'd have been in World War III.
Exactly. Now we've got this. This is, I'll tell you something. One of the things that I wish Ali was on this call tonight because I wanted to run this by her. This Malaysia airliner that disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I got a feeling about this. And there's some other people that I think do too, including at least one remote viewer I know. But I this thing almost to me feels like Lost.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with the plot arc of Lost and that flight and what happened with that.
Yeah, I am a little bit.
There was a similar event, I think, in 2009 with a French airliner. Similar thing, and then they said they found the airliner later. Now, that would have been either concurrent with or parallel to when Lost was airing. And the only reason I'm putting this out is because I'm not a news junkie. Things go in front of my eyes, and I completely ignore them, and then something else jumps up in front of me, and I get fixated on it, and I don't know why. And this Malaysia airliner thing is really interesting because it seems like now they're saying they have to widen the search coordinates. Well, they're already searching 10,000 square miles of ocean space.
Yeah, and how much fuel did this sucker have?
They have no clue what happened to this plane. This plane completely disappeared.
what about the report where a lot of the families were saying they're still getting ringtones when they call their phones?
Which is eerily like the mysterious so-called plane that went into the Pentagon on 9/11. You know, and I've for years said, why did we never get a list of passengers from that plane? Really, we never got a list of passengers from any of those planes.
No, the only thing we got were the completely intact hijacker passports.
Right.
And in the rubble.
And the supposed Todd Beamer cell phone call over Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
With, you know, Let's Roll or whatever it was. That after a while, even if it's engineered, it becomes surreal. And the surreal is now becoming the new normal. Planes disappear. And I think there was something nefarious about that flight, too. It appears as though somebody's passports, I think it was an Italian diplomat, reported that he was not on the flight, that his passport was stolen, which sounds a whole lot like the way maybe a terrorist cell or black ops would work.
Yeah.
There was something about this flight, you know, what was going on. I mean, China is so volatile right now, and there's so much going on in the background because of this. We're in an economic war right now with China.
Yes.
And also with Russia, because basically this is the war of the BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. But it's like a soft war? I wouldn't call it a Cold War, but I'd call it a soft war.
It's a soft war. Yeah, it's beyond a Cold War. It's a soft war, which is an economic war, a tech war, and some black operations.
Because
One step away from DEFCON 1.
Well, and I think we would be there. And I really think the whole thing that's going on with Russia right now is we have no leverage at all with Russia. We can't threaten them with trade sanctions. We don't trade with them, you know. And what's going on in the Ukraine is this is a repeat of really, really old. Well, it's actually a culture war because it's actually a religious war on one level. The Crimea, the Crimean wars were famous for being about religious oppression.
And they're voting Sunday. Kiev is voting whether to stay Ukraine or go Russian. They're going to go Russian.
They're going to re-embrace Russia because that's their culture.
Yeah. He's played a damn good short game. I don't know what his long game is, but his short game is brilliant.
I think his long game is basically to harden the alliances he already has, economically and geopolitically. I mean, this is not inconsiderable, the fact that these nations are basically not trading partners of the U.S., but what was clever was they sent John Kerry in to Ukraine bearing billions of dollars coming from the IMF. So that makes John Kerry the bagman for the IMF,
yep,
which is a private international banking firm, no different than the Federal Reserve, which now exposes bald-faced this entire government of who they really are. They're a corporation. They're not a government. Now, you're not going to hear that on the news analysis on Fox or anywhere else. And I said this to a few people, even people that I work with, you know, people that I'm actually kind of a little conservative about. But I said, look at this situation. Here's what the IMF is. And here's John Kerry. He's showing up and he's going to try and ply him with $1 billion up front and then possibly $3 billion more. All they're doing is they're buying debt. The IMF will go in, they'll seize their assets, they'll become just like all these other third world nations that dealt with the IMF and then they got looted and pillaged over for their assets. Because that's all this is.
Exactly what it is.
So you got a high stakes game and some very supernatural shit going on as well, because I think the tolerance level for this grand international crime syndicate is... really, the tolerance level is very low now. I think some of these people are going to start disappearing.
I think a lot of them already have, actually.
Yeah.
But you're right. They'll start disappearing to the point to where it's noticeable. It'll be publicly noticeable.
So I guess that makes us neither dazzle-like New Agers or doom-speaking apocalypse either. It's just kind of somewhere in the middle of this battle with pins in a map.
Well... makes us an yeah, walk the middle. It makes us gray. That's for sure.
That's great.
I'll stay there because
the gray walker.
I don't see a total non-survivable universe, totally destroyed apocalypse. I've never seen that. What I have seen are two sides going head to head with each other and humanity in the middle. And depending on which side wins, well, whether humanity does survive.
Yes.
Regardless. But it depends on what card they draw.
Well, it depends on how much longer. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of David Icke, but I got to admit, he termed a catchy thing when he said, humanity, get off your knees.
Yes, I've used that many times. That was one of the best phrases I've heard in a decade.
And quite frankly, I see glimmers of hope. And then some days I'm like, oh, shit, you went back to sleep again.
Yeah.
Because I watch people and the ebb and flow of things. It's like they hit the point where they know this is insane. They know that most of what we've been told about the way this world works is a lie. And I'm talking about everyday, meet them in the street, roll up your shirt sleeves and work with them type people. I'm not talking about the people that I know on the internet and the people that, you know, are kind of, they know what's going on. But they get to that point where they're like, you know, this is wrong. This is sick. And I think most people are too afraid to make the next step, because there is a point where you begin to move in the continuum. We have to make serious decisions about your own life, serious stuff, you know, and everybody's different. You know, I had somebody asking me, you know, should I have bank accounts? Should I be filing taxes? I'm like, dude, you have to make your own decisions. It's different for everyone because you got to know how much pain you're willing to tolerate.
I say live your life to the best you can.
Yeah.
Right up to the very end.
Yeah, I mean, you know a compromise when you make it. You know when you're in a situation where you go, you know, I just can't go there anymore. And for everybody, that is different because this is a test.
Yeah, every day we live is a test and always will be. That's straight up the way it is. Everything is a test. Sometimes we pass them, sometimes we fail them. The key is don't fail too many of them in a row.
Now you get up, you dust yourself off, you learn that lesson, you know that move works, this move doesn't work, and it's another round.
That's right.
And I can't judge somebody else's movements. I mean, I can judge, again, there's a line, you know. There is a place where evil lives, and you have to call it that. You have to mark it, and then you have to deal with it. You know, the whole gray thing is that it's, you know, between all those boundaries, there's just a lot of people stumbling through three-dimensional, four-dimensional reality, doing, frankly, the best they can under the circumstances.
That's right. You can't judge someone without knowing their condition. And even then you can't judge, but you're not inside them. You don't have their thought process. You don't know what they're going through in their own lives.
Yeah, and this is a conversation I've had with, you know, a group of people that I occasionally do conference calls with, and they're like, well, shouldn't we love and forgive people? And I said, look, there's a point where forgiveness just means that you go, that person's an asshole and I need to get them out of my life. That's what forgiveness becomes. It's yep. Not embracing evil. You know, and I know almost all of us, even in our own families, have had to make horrible decisions about this.
Oh, hell yes.
You know that. No, I know that. Where we just go, you know what, I can't, this is intolerable, we need to cut. And in some cases, it's got to be done rather ruthlessly.
And just because you forgive someone who's put a knife in your back doesn't mean you have to turn around.
That's right. That's right. Well, the reason you forgive is for yourself. Because exactly. If you're walking around with that in your stomach, you're already poisoned. And when you're poisoned, you're worthless as a warrior. You're worthless as somebody who can do good work.
That is very true. No, it's fading in and out.
Yeah, you're getting signal fade. Well, it was a hell of a good conversation.
This is Off Planet Radio.